Welcome to Intuitive Transformations with your host, Sylvia Henderson, and discover tools, wisdom, and inspiration that will empower you to transform your life. Sylvia is an intuitive life coach and energy healer with a growing practice that is focused on empowering others to be more of who they want to be. For the next hour, join Sylvia and explore and unravel anything in the way of you creating the life that you would love to live on the Om Times Radio Network.
Well, hello and welcome to the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show, where you will find tools that you can use to change and transform your life every Thursday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern right here on the Om Times Radio Network, the voice of consciousness at omtimes.com. This is Sylvia Henderson, your host, and if you would like to learn more about me and the work that I do, be sure to visit my website at intuitivetransformations.net. That's intuitivetransformations.net. And download my free 20-minute healing audio called Healing Fear During Uncertain Times when you join my email group. This audio supports you in releasing fear, worry, anxiety, especially during times of change and uncertainty. So you can also register for our next Energy Alchemy group healing call that's scheduled for this Sunday, April 9th at 4 p.m. Eastern, where we will release the energetic obstacles that block us from stepping into our ability to transform our reality. So you can learn more about energy alchemy also by just visiting my website, again, intuitivetransformations.net. Well, today is Thursday, April 6, 2017, and April is Autism Awareness Month. For those of you who listen to my show regularly, you already know that I have two young adult sons diagnosed with autism. My oldest is 22, and my youngest will turn 21 just this month on April 19th. To say that it has been an interesting and even often at times difficult journey would be an understatement. Nothing can really prepare a mother or a father for what your child's life or your life will be like after the diagnosis of autism is given. When my oldest son was diagnosed in 1997 at the age of 3 with classic autism, it was as if a steel door slammed shut on my life and on his future. My oldest son began his life meeting all of the typical developmental markers until he was about 15 months of age when he developed an extremely rare autoimmune disorder called Kawasaki syndrome shortly after receiving his MMR vaccination. Now, I'm not going to go into all the gory details, but basically his entire cardiovascular system became inflamed. He spent about 3 days in the hospital receiving high dosages of aspirin and intravenous immunoglobulin and had constant heart monitoring and daily EKGs. After receiving treatment, my little toddler began to recover from all of his symptoms. However, within weeks, he experienced Kawasaki syndrome again, and this time it was very painfully affecting his joints, making it painful for him to move or even be picked up and held. My vibrant little toddler, who loved running through my home, could no longer walk and would literally drag his body across the floor to move from one area to another, just like a soldier would do lying low in the trenches trying to avoid a stray bullet. But this time, the autism bullet hit him and it hit us. After receiving the same treatment that he did for his previous bout of Kawasaki syndrome, within hours after concluding his treatment and being discharged, for 24 continuous hours, my son screamed off and on in inconsolable agony. When we called the doctors at the hospital, the doctors concluded that it was likely just a reaction to the sedative he had been given during his run of EKG scans and that they did not believe that there was any reason for us to bring him back to the hospital. Back then, I believed in following doctors' orders explicitly. I've since learned to never again blindly trust a doctor over my own maternal instincts. I now believe that my son experienced the process of encephalitis, which is inflammation and swelling of the brain. Back then, I did not know any better. After 24 hours of pure hell, my son began to physically recover quickly, but we began to notice that he stopped pointing at his letters and pictures and the books that we were reading to him. His words began to come out mixed up. Instead of saying airplane, he would say O-plane. And then he stopped responding to his name when we called him. My beautiful son, who was engaging, identifying letters and pictures, and talking, disappeared into the void of autism. My youngest son was quite different than my oldest. He received all of his vaccinations up until the age of 18 months. He had muscle tone issues from birth and did not meet the standard developmental markers. And no matter the form of milk he was given as a baby, any ingestion of milk, breast formula, or goat's milk, or even baby food would soon be followed by projectile vomiting. I went to my very first conference on autism when my youngest son was 18 months of age, and then I learned about the checklist for autism in toddlers. Prior to that, I knew that there was something amiss with him, but I had no idea that autism was also going to be his issue. As I sat in that conference, I silently experienced the devastation all over again that I did with my first son. With this new awareness, I fought back tears in a room full of strangers as I could no longer deny that my second son was also on the autism spectrum. Later during the conference, an evening news show came in with camera crew and asked all the parents in the room to stand up if they believed that their child's autism was caused by vaccinations. The room was full and the entire room stood up. Remembering that moment, still to this day, gives me chills and makes me emotional. When my oldest son was diagnosed with autism in 1997, the likelihood of having a child with autism was 1 in 10,000. Today, 20 years later, the likelihood of having a child with autism can be as high as 1 in 42 if your child happens to be a boy. I have heard the argument that the tremendous rise in autism is due to better diagnostic skills. But I ask you this, if more children are being diagnosed with autism today due to better diagnostic tools, then wouldn't we see an equal decline in all of the other childhood intellectual disabilities? Surely these children would have been diagnosed with some form of cognitive developmental delay disorder. So in honor of Autism Awareness Month, I have someone joining me here today who has done some very high-level research that explains why we are losing an entire generation of children to the diagnosis of autism every day. His name is Kent Heckin-Lively. Sorry, Kent. And he is the author of Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, which provides a fascinating array of evidence that the CDC and Big Pharma do not want you to know even exist. Kent is also a science teacher. He's an attorney, a founding contributing editor of Age of Autism. During college, Kent worked for U.S. Senator Pete Wilson, and in law school, he was a writer and editor of the school's Law Review and spent his summers working for the U.S. Attorney's Office in San Francisco. His previous book, Plague, written with Dr. Judy Mikalowicz, a 20-year government scientist and former head of the Lab of Antiviral Drug Mechanisms at the National Cancer Institute, is one of the best-selling virus books of the past 20 years. Kent and his wife, Linda, live in Northern California with their two children, Jacqueline and Ben. Kent, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sylvia.
Absolutely, and I'm just very thrilled that we were able to arrange it so that this interview could occur during Autism Awareness Month, because this show is all about bringing even more awareness as to why autism has become such an epidemic, and maybe there's some things that we can do to change that and turn that around.
Yeah, so, I absolutely think that, because I think that the importance of my book is that it is really a compact story of how science has lost its soul in regards to autism. And I trace it back to the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which took vaccines out of the regular civil court system. And this is something that will probably be a shock to a lot of your listeners to know that vaccines, which are given to our children, and I really don't think there's anything more precious to us than our children, you don't have the regular consumer protections you have with every single other product. And I think that that has set the stage for this terrible evil and injustice to arise in regards to vaccines. I mean, you know, I think that everybody in the country has had the experience of, you know, a child falling down a well and the entire country holds its breath while they try to rescue that child. And we've had more than a million children fall down the well of autism, and nobody seems to be paying attention to that. And so I really wrote this book as a wake-up call for what has happened in the past, to let people know what's happened, but also to give them extraordinary hope for the future, because I genuinely believe that if science focuses on what has gone wrong with these children, we can rescue our lost children. Those million children who've fallen down the well of autism, we can get them back, but we need to be honest and we need to tell the truth.
That's right. You can't solve a problem if you don't understand and fully accept its cause. I wholeheartedly agree with you, which is why I'm really excited to have you on the show. So I know we're going to be headed to a break in about a minute or so, but Ken, when we return from our break, I would like you to talk about, you know, your child. I know you have a child with autism, and share your journey with autism, how it began and how it led you to write your book. We'll be back in just a moment. Everyone, please stay tuned for more of Intuitive Transformations on OhmTimesRadio.com.
The future of internet radio is here. OhmTimes Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Miriam Knight of New Consciousness Review, inviting you to my new show where I interview the rising stars of the conscious awakening. We'll explore the many faces of consciousness in action and intriguing perspectives on life, the universe, and everything in between. Join us each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Rising Stars Show.
I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes I did the same things over and over, until one day I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Wow, well, that last commercial was certainly incredibly appropriate given the content of today's show. So, Kent, you also have a child diagnosed with autism. Would you mind sharing how your journey with autism began and how it led to you writing your book, Inoculated?
Yeah, you know, it's actually a little bit like your story, Sylvia, because what happened was with our first child, Jacqueline, she went off of breast milk at about 6 months, and then about a week or two later, she got her six-month series of shots, and then a few weeks after that, we noticed the first little head bobs, which were indicative of her seizure disorder, and that was diagnosed about 3 to 4 months later. She was about 10 months, and then at the age of three, she was diagnosed with autism. And, you know, we never really thought about the vaccine issue. I mean, we'd heard it, but we thought it was kind of crazy, and, you know, in our mind, we had just sort of drawn an unlucky card in the genetic lottery. Then what happened was our son came along, and for reasons unrelated to autism, we kept him on a hypoallergenic milk formula. But that's kind of expensive. So at about 15 months, we switched back to a regular milk formula. And I actually took my son to his 18-month checkup. And because I'd given the pediatrician hell because I thought she missed something in my daughter's 6-month checkup, he went through a full developmental checkup, passed with flying colors, 15, 20 words, looking appropriately, everything great, gets his shots, we leave. 3 days later, my wife, who's a speech therapist, says, Ben has stopped talking, and he started pounding his head on the floor. And I'm thinking, my God, I just took him to the doctors. He was fine. And then suddenly it dawned on me that it was the vaccines. And then what happened was really dramatic, and this is really what changed my life and put me on a different path, is that luckily within a couple days of him going mute, I ran across the gluten casein-free diet, put him on that immediately, and after 12 days he said his first word again. And it was as if I had rescued him as he was falling into the abyss of autism. And it took him about a year for him to catch up in language. It took him about a year for his sensory issues to go away. But he entered kindergarten as a normally developing five-year-old. And so he's 16 years old now. He's at the top of his class. He's an athlete. He runs track and got a great sense of humor, lots of friends. And, you know, my daughter is still nonverbal in diapers and, you know, very severely affected. So I say sometimes that I feel like I'm living the American dream and the American nightmare because I have one child who's very severely affected, can't be left alone, and I have another kid who's just perfectly fine. And actually, I have to say, when I look at him compared to his peers, his ability to attend and pay attention is far superior to a typical 16-year-old boy in America today. So that really was a point in my life where I said, something happened, I'm being lied to, and I always jokingly say, you know, my mother was a full-blooded Sicilian, so family is really important to me, and you attack your Sicilian's family, and, you know, watch out. So that really has started me for the past 14 and a half years being an autism advocate and writing the book Plague with Dr. Judy Mikovits, which looked at the question of whether animal viruses are jumping into the human population because they grow the viruses for vaccines in animal tissue, and I think that there's probably some contribution from animal retroviruses to autism. And then I ran across a story of Dr. William Thompson, the CDC whistleblower, and this story broke in the autism community in the summer of 2014, and it was that a senior scientist at the CDC, Dr. William Thompson, turned whistleblower and turned over a lot of documents to Congress saying that the CDC investigated whether earlier administration of the MMR vaccine was leading to increased rates of autism. And they actually found that it did, specifically in a couple different groups. One group was African-American males. I think it was about a 340% increase. And then in another group that they termed isolated autism, which basically means children with no other health conditions, and they found, I think that was about a 2.45-fold increase. And, you know, for your listeners, anything in a court of law, anything above 2.0 is really considered, you know, pretty strong evidence of a connection. But what these scientists did in the early 2000s when they found this link was that they decided to remove about a third of the African-American males from the population, thus getting the risk ratio to drop below 2.0. So they could say, oh, yeah, there's a signal, but we really don't think it's important, and, you know, it doesn't rise to the level of concern.
When you say removed a third of the African-American male population, what you really mean is that they removed the data about a third of that population that they previously was included, yeah. Correct? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so the way they did it is they said, oh, they didn't have a valid Georgia birth certificate. You know, they'd come from another state or something like that. And, you know, that was never the way it was supposed to be. And, you know, the way science is supposed to be performed is that you come up with an analysis plan, a research plan, and then you stick to that research plan. And if you change it for any way, you disclose why you changed it and exactly how you did it. And the CDC didn't do that. And that's really why I subtitled the book, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, because, you know, I'm a science teacher, and I know the way science is supposed to be done. And this was not science. This was politics. This was protecting the vaccine program. At that time, 5,000 cases were going through the vaccine court, a class action in regards to vaccines and autism. Specifically, one of the claims was the MMR vaccine. And if the CDC had honestly released that data, those cases would have been compensated, and you were probably looking at a liability to the government in the hundreds of billions of dollars, if not up to $1 trillion. So this is dramatic stuff. This is Tuskegee on steroids. I mean, for all of us who talk about Tuskegee, you know, that was 399 African American men that they didn't treat. Well, this is millions of children, not just in the United States, but around the world. And so this is this really, I talk about this, this is a fight for humanity, because if we're not telling the truth about how we're damaging a generation of children, and you have people like MIT senior research scientist Dr. Stephanie Seneff say that if current trends continue, by 2032, one in two children will have autism, I don't know how we're going to survive as a species.
You know what's also frightening about those numbers? If she's saying one in two with autism, let's not forget about how many children also have been diagnosed with ADD and ADHD and other attention deficit kind of related disorders, because it really is a continuum. There's the classic autism to Asperger's to ADHD and ADD. And so, you know, for people that are listening and they're like, well, you know, he's throwing around a lot of acronyms I'm not familiar with. So when you know, some of you know who the CDC is, and that's the Center for Disease Control, correct? And they are, they are an organization that was put in place to keep the general population safe, so that when a pharmaceutical company decides that they're going to release a new medication, it goes through proper testing that eliminates or at least illuminates the clear risk associated with taking that medication. So, it, you know, the very organization that has been put in place to protect the general populace has, in from reading your book, has absolutely betrayed the general populace in favor of Big Pharma's profit. And when we say Big Pharma, that's pharmaceutical companies who have major lobbying powers within our government in D.C. And so why do you, you know, the obvious thing is, I hate to say it, money. But they're putting at risk our entire country and other civil, you know, other countries around the world with these vaccinations, with suppressing the information about the vaccination so people can make an educated decision. So you talked about Ronald Reagan signing that National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act and how that really changed how the court systems can even be engaged if someone has a vaccine injury. So do you believe that this was even kind of put in place by the pharmaceutical companies in early on in 86? Or when was Thimerosal introduced? I mean, let's talk about kind of the timeline.
Well, what was interesting is that, so the schedule in 1986 was essentially about 10 doses of six different vaccines before the age of five, with the majority of those happening shortly before kids went to kindergarten. And you could argue that that made a good deal of sense biologically, because the immune system is usually developed between the age of three and four. So even if we accept that, if you accept the vaccines are a good intervention, biologically that makes some sense. The problem is, what's happened is, behind the shield of this vaccine court, the vaccine companies have realized that they could introduce so many more vaccines. So currently, before the age of five, kids get 49 doses of 16 different vaccines. And that is a dramatic increase, with the majority of that, about 25 of those, coming before the first year of life. Well, that makes absolutely no sense, because the immune system is developing at that time. And so why are you giving these shots prior to the immune system really being primed? And I think the biggest example of that is the hepatitis B shot. Hepatitis B is given on the first day of life. Well, hepatitis B is basically spread through intravenous drug use or promiscuous sex. But the it only lasts for 10 years of protection. So are we really worried that kids by the age of 10 years old are going to be using IV drug needles and having promiscuous sex? Makes no sense. Not to say how they're totally deranged in the immune system. You talked about encephalitis. That seems to be the problem. And the old mantra was that the brain was not connected to the immune system. Well, recent studies have shown that it is. So everybody said, okay, you have inflammation in the body from a vaccine. I understand that. But you also have it in the brain. And I think that that leads to the problems of autism and a lot of the learning disorders that we're seeing in kids, in addition to allergies and things like juvenile diabetes, which is going up dramatically as well.
Yeah, it's really quite frightening when you kind of step back and stop just following the masses and start asking different questions like, is this really necessary? Does my child need 49 doses of vaccinations before they are 5 years old, when most of those illnesses have been eradicated? And it's quite interesting, because California is doing something that is very egregious and horrifying to consider. And I know we're going to be going into a break, and when we return, we're going to continue the conversation with Kent Hecken-Lively. We're talking about his new book, Inoculated: How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism, during Autism Awareness Month. We'll be back in just a few moments. Please stay tuned for more.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hey, let me ask you something. Would you seat your three-year-old child on a windowsill? Would you seat them beside a lit fireplace or by the deep end of a pool? One last question. Would you seat your child in a car seat that's not correct for them? Car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Secure their future. Seat them in the correct car seat. For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're back with Sylvia Henderson and my guest, Kent Hecken-Lively, talking about his book, Inoculated: How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. And, you know, for some of you listening, I want you to know we're not trying to just get you excited or over-exaggerate what the situation is. Medical science, you have to remember, is a relatively new science. And so they're still learning, which is why they call it the practice of medicine. If you look what happened with antibiotics and how due to its overuse that we now have an array of antibiotic resistant illnesses that can actually kill you. And so this is really about educating you so that you can make your own decisions from an educated perspective and point of view. I mean, I think it's important to always question everything versus just doing what you're told, because when it comes to our children, they are our most valuable resource. And as Kent said before we went to the break, if they're speculating that autism, and I know that children are still being diagnosed. I have a friend with a daycare, and at least every half a year, a new child comes in and they're on the spectrum. If we end up with one out of every two children being diagnosed and then the rest of the population that's not ending up with something else, what are we doing to ourselves as a civilization? It's like Kent said, are we going to survive? Kent, one of the big players in the autism debate and vaccinations is Dr. Andrew Wakefield. And he's been heavily villainized by the American Medical Association because he came along, came across a finding and an association with vaccinations, autism, and gut injury. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so Dr. Andrew Wakefield comes from four generations of physicians and surgeons in England. In 1997, I believe he published a paper in The Lancet, which was just a case report because he'd been working on the question of irritable bowel syndrome and Crohn's disease in the MMR vaccine. And he had a number of parents come to him saying that their children developed terrible gut problems and autism after the MMR vaccine. So he goes in, he performs a regular test that you perform if you suspect gastrointestinal problems. So that's some scoping, it's some lumbar punctures. And lo and behold, he finds that in specific areas of the gut that the measles virus is present. And it's not just the measles virus, it's not the wild type of measles, it's from the vaccine. And this launches really a jihad against him by the pharmaceutical companies, resulting in 2010 in him having his license yanked. What's really interesting is he published with 12 other authors. They actually tried to go after three of them. They convicted two of them. And the one who he was convicted with, Dr. John Walker Smith, is one of the founders of pediatric gastroenterology in England, and he actually got his insurance carrier to sponsor a defense, and he launched an appeal, and he won his appeal. So it's really interesting because Dr. Andrew Wakefield is accused of being part of a conspiracy, and he's in a conspiracy of one as of this moment. So what was really interesting when this research was done at the CDC, and I got to read the original plan, it was a good plan, but they hid the data. And what was really interesting in searching out this story is to find that the whistleblower, Dr. William Thompson, had first contacted another autism scientist and parent, Dr. Brian Hooker, and revealed the depth of this corruption and handed over the documents to him and wanted him to publish the real data. And then Dr. Hooker got in touch with Dr. Wakefield and actually got Dr. Thompson of the CDC to have several conversations with Dr. Andy Wakefield. And in the course of those conversations, Dr. Thompson apologized to Dr. Wakefield for the part he had played in this corruption. And he'd even gone so far as to said, if we had honestly reported these findings in 2003, 2004, your work would have been vindicated and you would not have had to endure what you've endured over that time. And, I always say that Dr. Wakefield has this, amazingly incredible soul, because Dr. Wakefield's response was, I forgive you completely and I wish only the best for you. And I think that there's something about that kind of elemental goodness in somebody like Dr. Wakefield, who has been villainized as no other scientist in our modern era has, that I really think that he's saint-like. I think that he's in the same league as Mohandas Gandhi, as Nelson Mandela, as Martin Luther King, that he wants to be positive. Even though his career was ruined, he's gone on, he's continued to fight. You know, I really think that I encourage everybody in your audience to watch the documentary film, Vaxxed, From Cover-Up to Catastrophe. They can get it on Amazon. I think that my book is essentially, you know, the book version of the movie Vaxxed. But since it's a book, I can go a lot deeper into some things and tell a couple stories that people didn't get in Vaxxed.
Right, right. It really is like the companion guide to the documentary Vaxxed. And yes, you can get that on Amazon. You can also go to their website, vaxxedthemovie.com, and that's V-A-X-X-E-D, themovie.com, and you can watch it on your computer or you can find a public viewing in your area, because what's exciting about this is the information is getting out there. What's unfortunate is that the general populace has been kind of, well, you know, they've already been out there disputing and saying, no, 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 vaccinations are fine, they're good, there's nothing wrong with them. And what people need to know is, even before the epidemic of autism, vaccines were looked at kind of questionably. I remember when my son was diagnosed, and after seeing everyone stand up in that room, I purchased a book, and it was called Shot in the Dark. And it's really interesting that a lot of these childhood diseases that vaccinations have been heralded as resolving or eliminating were already in decline before the vaccinations were even brought to market. So there's a lot of things that I think people need to just wake up and start really asking some different questions and doing some good research, because doctors are trained to share with their patients what they are taught in schools, and medical schools are highly funded by pharmaceutical companies. Many doctors are highly rewarded for their usage and highly courted by vacations and seminars and beautiful tropical resorts either free or cost effective, that are highly funded by pharmaceutical companies. And so this is a different medical model than what I grew up in the 50s in. What we have in 2017 is a very pharmacologically driven form of medicine, and we really need to start asking questions. What have you found that's positive or more promising, that's hopeful?
Well, I really wanted to focus on the work of a researcher at the University of California, San Diego, Robert Navio. And he has a really interesting theory, and he's making some exceptional progress, and I hope he doesn't get scared off of it. So he thinks that what's happening in autism is that the vaccines or things in our environment, let's say pesticides, let's say antibiotics, something like that, is activating something called the cell danger response. Now, usually what happens is cells have to be in communication with other cells in order to function properly. But when cells sense some danger, and that can be chemical, biological, it can be viral, they respond by cutting off communication with each other. They also respond by powering down the mitochondria. And so what Dr. Navio believes is that the cells get stuck in this cell danger response. So he went looking for a medication which would tell the cells that basically danger's over, start talking to each other. He found this drug called Suramin, which was used to treat African sleeping sickness very effectively for over 70 years. And what he did was you can actually create a mouse model of autism by overstimulating the immune system of the mother. So what he did was he got these mice who had developed autism as a result of the immune stimulation of the mother during pregnancy. And he was able to quantify their autism by checking these things called metabolites, which are signaling molecules that you can get from urine. And he found, you know, how they were abnormal compared to normally developing mice. And so basically in giving them a single dose of Suramin, he was able to reverse the autism. All of a sudden, the cells started talking to each other. Their behavior changed dramatically. He noticed that what happened was that the mice, that after a couple weeks had washed out, but what he theorized is you would really only need to do this for a period of a year to 2 years in human beings, and things should be normalized. He was also able to do this in mice who have Fragile X syndrome, so which is often referred to as genetic autism. Same thing, same problem. Their body just wasn't creating the molecules to tell the cells to communicate with each other. He also did this in mice who have a human age equivalent of 30 years old, and he got the same result. And so I've actually had dinner with him, and I've talked to him and everything, and you know, he's really excited about this. He's also completed his first human trial, and although it hasn't been published yet, I've heard anecdotal reports that the results on the kids were so dramatic that he needs to redo the test request to gather all the information. So this is a pharmaceutical that had been used safely for over 70 years. The cancer doctors got a hold of it in the 70s and 80s and kind of ruined it because they gave really high doses because they were going after HIV, caused some kidney toxicity. But we're not even talking about the doses that they used, not even for HIV, but the doses lower than they used for African sleeping sickness. We're talking about doses at about one-tenth of the dosages they used for African sleeping sickness, because they're not trying to kill anything. They're just trying to get the body to start working properly. So I'm really hopeful that with a new administration, and it's hopefully interested in cures, not just, okay, how are we going to pay for all this, that scientists like Dr. Navio will not fear what happened to Dr. Wakefield and to a lesser extent to Dr. Judy Mikovits, and that we can really get good science, because science is supposed to be the servant of humanity, and I'm trying to help science reestablish that role in our lives.
Well, I really do appreciate that. That's very, very exciting news. I am just thrilled to hear that. We're going to be back in just a moment with more from Kent Hicken-Lively and talking about what you can do in regards to autism. We're going to talk about what's happening in California when we return after the break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and the text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
We're back, and before we continue with the show, can you please let everyone know how they can get your book and how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can get my book on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, and just type in inoculated and my last name, Hicken-Lively, full of heck, twice as lively, Hicken-Lively. I've got a website, www.inoculated.org. Inoculated has one N.
Very good. Awesome. So I cannot tell you how excited I am to hear about this potential new protocol using something that is relatively safe. And, you know, the fact that they used it on mice that had a relative age that's close to what a 30-year-old adult would have, that would have autism, and the results that they're getting. This is incredibly promising. And I know that there are people in Congress like Robert Kennedy Jr., who has been involved in bringing vaccination awareness, the dangers of it, to the awareness of the general populace. But I also know that we have some things going on in California that are a little frightening and feel very Big Brother-ish, and that is that they're making it now illegal if you do not vaccinate your child. I know in Washington State, we have the option, where I live, we have the option of opting out for whatever reason. Doesn't even have to be a religious reason. And I believe California used to have those options available, and those have been stripped away. So is there any way to turn that around? And how can people living in other states avoid mandated vaccination from showing up in their own state? Because it's important that if we live in a country where we are considered to be free, that we actually get to experience life as free in this country.
Well, it really is terrifying. And unfortunately, California is the place where pharma has won a victory. They've also won it in Mississippi. But these mandatory vaccine laws have been turned back in a lot of states. And a number of people are putting lawsuits together to put this away. But it's really unfortunate, and I hate to say it this way, because California is kind of crazy. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party, which has had a wonderful history of fighting for individual rights, has been bought off by the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, the guy Richard Pan, who put this through in California, received over $90,000 from the pharmaceutical companies. The Speaker of our House, you know, got something like $85,000, and it really is terribly, terribly corrupt. Not to mention a violation of our Constitution, not to mention a violation of the Nuremberg Code, which says that you cannot make consent to a medical procedure contingent upon educational or employment opportunities. This is just terrible. And so hopefully what we're doing is we're fighting. We're winning every place else except in California and Mississippi. And what has been great is that President Trump, regardless of what you think about him for other things, has talked about vaccine injuries, has reached across the aisle, has made Robert Kennedy Jr. Head of the Vaccine Safety Commission, and you know, and we're going to be pushing these things forward. So he's also met with Dr. Andy Wakefield. He took a copy of the documentary Vaxxed. That was on August 10th, 2016. And he promised that he would make this a big issue, and you know, he's continued to push forward with us. So we're really hopeful because, you know, unfortunately, I think our system has become so corrupt that our congressmen and senators, regardless of what party you are kind of corrupted. So thankfully, we have somebody at the top who is not bought off, and you may think he's crazy for other reasons, but he's not bought off, and he knows that this is a problem. He has said that he knows friends of his whose children were normal before a shot and not normal after. And, you know, that's all we're asking. And, you know, I think that what we need to do is we need to get rid of the vaccine court. If the pharmaceutal company is right and these vaccines are as safe as sugar water, fine, prove that in a court of law. And so I think that a lot of things are going to change, and you know, we need to get our freedoms back, and we need to save our kids. And you know, for anybody who thinks that I'm, you know, saying stuff that's crazy, read my book. You know, I got my documents from Congress, so I had to apply for Congress for these whistleblower documents. I got them. I wrote about them. And you know, if you think that I'm wrong, that vaccines or pesticides or something is behind this increase in autism, and we need to look at it, well, fine, then come up with your own answers. But, you know, I've been in this fight for nearly 15 years, and science hasn't given me one single thing to help my child. So, of course, I'm upset, and I'm calling on things to change because, you know, it took us only 9 years from Kennedy saying we should go to the moon until we landed on the moon. This is crazy. If we had an autism moonshot, I think we could solve this thing in 2 to 3 years, probably working off of the great work that Robert Navio has done at the University of California, San Diego. And then we'd be done with this.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I have to say, I was shocked when I discovered how many of my Democratic representatives here in Washington State were getting big paychecks from Big Pharma, as well as other people that are in our Congress and Senate who are Democrats who, you know, I was like, wow, how can you get like a high five-figure check from Big Pharma and then really be able to vote from a place of pure objectivity? You know, it's just really not possible. I'll be honest with you, I'm not exactly a Trump fan, so I don't know whether he will or not, but I hope that he does. That's encouraging to hear. And I agree with you, something has got to happen because our system is broken, especially if we have this separate court system that clearly is protecting the vaccination manufacturers versus protecting those who are receiving the vaccination and being injured by vaccines. And so I do want people to know, though, too, that truly what you've provided in your book, Kent, it's not sensationalism. You really do have some really good, well-proven, concrete evidence that you've provided. And I'll be honest, everyone, this is not the first book that I've seen that talks about the whistleblower that was working with the CDC. It's probably the better written book that I received, which is why I had Kent on the show. But this is real. You know, this is not sci-fi. This is not spy conspiracy movie nonsense. This is our reality. This is really happening in our government. And I know every single person listening to this show knows at least one person who either has an autistic child or knows someone else who has an autistic child, because this is something when I was growing up, we did not have. I remember bringing my son in, my oldest one, to his developmental pediatrician, and the doctor told me, you know, yeah, it looks like autism. And I'm like, how could that be? And you know, my son didn't have the typical what showed up in the baby book, what to expect in the first few years, description of what autism was. He wasn't sitting in a corner rocking back and forth. He was very, he still is a very loving person and loves hugs. But, you know, he said, this is something that we're just starting at that time in 97, we're just trying to see a huge increase that we've never seen before. And they were scratching their heads. Then in 97, 20 years later, we're still scratching our heads, and children are suffering, families are suffering. This is not just about what happens to a child. This destroys entire families. In this country, 50% of all marriages fail. If you have a child on the spectrum, it's more like 70 to 80% of the marriages that fail. You know, it affects families economically. It's they're trying to provide the best for their child by behavioral services, and families are literally putting their homes up, their mortgages up, in order to pay for these services because they're so desperate to want to help their children. And outcomes are not all that positive right now. I'm very hopeful with what you've shared, Kent, about this this African sleeping medication that maybe opens some new inroads into how we treat autism in a very safe and humane manner. Oh, gosh, I don't know. Is there anything else you want to share, Kent? Because I know we're coming to the end of the show.
I think that one of the most interesting things is this is not a Republican or a Democratic problem. This is a problem of our system.
It's a world problem.
I was just with Robert Kennedy Jr. in Washington, D.C. for the Revolution and Truth rally. And when he stood up and he told the story, and apparently he has known the former founder of Fox News, Roger Ailes, since Kennedy was 16 years old. And he said that in a conversation he had with Roger Ailes, Ailes told him that 70% of the revenue for Fox News comes from pharmaceutical companies. And Ailes said if he had, if any of his hosts at Fox News started talking about vaccines and autism, he would have no choice but to fire them immediately.
Yep.
Now, yep. Fox News is not unusual. It's across the media world. So, I mean, I tell that story to say that, you know, you wouldn't put Roger Ailes and Robert Kennedy Jr. together. But, I mean, these are the wealthy and powerful people of our country who are not able to get this message out. And that's how bad this is. So, you know, but we're making inroads. What was really interesting is a study came out recently looking at attitudes about vaccines and autism, and they found out that 32% of Trump voters believed that there was a link between vaccines and autism, but 19% of Hillary voters thought the same thing. So when I'm looking at those numbers, I'm saying, oh, my God, 25% of our country believes that there's some link between vaccines and autism. This in the face of a total media blackout. This in the face of the pharmaceutical industry spending twice as much on lobbying. They have, I believe they have 1,500 lobbyists in Washington, D.C. So they basically have three lobbyists for every single member of Congress. In the face of those overwhelming odds, we've been able to convince 25% of the country that this is an issue that should be looked at. We're winning.
Well, it depends on who you're polling. I think that the percentage is probably higher if you take away the whole thing about one party versus another. At any rate, Kent, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. His book is Inoculated, How Science Lost Its Soul in Autism. Everyone, thank you for listening to the Intuitive Transformations radio show on OhmTimes.com. This is Sylvia Henderson signing out and wishing you the very best for your week ahead. Know that you are loved, and I look forward to talking to you again next week. Take care now. Bye-bye.